When they expelled him for that, they expelled him for that? Suspended him. At the time, the object of education was obedience, not intellectual freedom. Has anything changed? Anyway, Walter took an airplane without permission from a neighboring ranch. He could fly a plane in high school? No one knew he could. First, he buzzed the high school a few times while it was in session. Then he bombed it with a volume called The Collected Plays of Shakespeare. Made a perfect hit, too. Smashed the skylight over the stairwell. The book and all this glass came crashing down 3 floors. And you've never wanted to tell me about this man? Wild, you mentioned football. One Saturday at a home game, suddenly he appeared on the field, standing up in the saddle of his motorcycle. He caught a pass, sat down, roared down the field and through the goalposts, ball cradled under one arm. Did he ever spend any time in jail? Some. He was so handsome, so... Josie shrugged. Energetic. Everyone should have loved him. Everyone hated him. Everything he did jeered at everything we held sacred. He jeered at the school by fooling the teacher with his Shakespearean sonnet. He jeered at football by saying, if the object is to get the football down the field through the goalposts, use a motorcycle. He'd show up at school dances drunk and dance energetically, satirically, I now realize. Everyone else would go home. Dance with you? To my embarrassment, yes. What was a nice girl like you doing with a rogue like him? Maybe I had a little understanding of him, at least between someone very feminine and someone very masculine. If not much ability to understand, there is a very strong chemistry, electricity, sex. He wasn't an outlaw. As soon as everybody in the town thought he was, and the real baddies began to talk as if he were one of their own, Walter dressed in as close an approximation of a suit and tie as he and his family possessed, and went down to the local baddie hangout, a really horrible roadhouse about 8 miles out of town, and started a riot I expect they're still talking about. He jeered at everybody. How old was he then? Would you believe 15? How could you not tell me about him? Energetic, his mother said. Bright, handsome, and energetic. Saw things his own way, and never asked for agreement. I mean, it's not everybody who's expelled from school and the local roadhouse. I thought him simply marvelous. Is that why you've never sought agreement from me? Josie looked at her son from under lowered lids. Anyway, we were married literally over my father's dead body. I've told you your grandfather died of a heart attack during my senior year of high school. Yes, must put that fact in my medical folder if I live long enough. Walter had a flying job. Flying ranches around, mining executives, emergency medical equipment, out-of-state crop dusting in season. Sometimes, frankly, I wasn't absolutely sure where he was. Weather's always a problem in a job like that. Josie poured coffee for them both. I got pregnant immediately. I thought that was the right thing to do. That was the way life was, that we both wanted it. It never occurred to me you were supposed to think about such things. We were buying a house trailer. I thought we were perfectly happy. What do you guess he thought? Josie sighed. Everyone was telling this boy, Walter, that he was married and about to be a father and ought to give up flying and riding motorcycles, that he ought to give up being Walter. At the time, I thought such talk was natural, too. I wondered since how he heard it. Come on, get to the good part. Me. You were born 10 days ahead of expectations. Walter had promised he would be with me when you were born. In fact, he was across the state. My mother telephoned him the good news. He said he would take off and fly home right away. There being a major storm in his path, he was advised against flying. He took off. He never arrived. He crashed. 7 years later, we were able to assume him dead. After the snows melted in the spring, a search was made for his plane. It was never found. He died in childbirth. An enigmatic statement for which I apologize. I always thought it rather graceful. What I mean by it is, what was in his mind when he climbed into that airplane, when he took off, while he flew alone across the state of Montana in the dark, presumptively to his wife and son, me and you? Do you understand? What was in his mind at that point has always been more important to me in a way than whether he lived or died. Maybe I understand. A little. Who was Walter? Who is he? I need my clothes. Josie looked at him as if awaking suddenly. Where are you going?
I don't know.
When will you know?
Fletch said, It's a long drive to the airport.
Chapter 5 May I kiss the bride, too?
Fletch decided where he wanted to go only as he walked down the airport corridor with the muddy envelope under his arm and saw Barbara and Alston waiting outside the gate.
Where have you been? Barbara asked.
Where did you go? Fletch asked.
Where did you go?
I didn't know where you went.
Alston rolled up his eyes.
Have Cindy and her friend gone? Fletch asked.
Barbara said, They've gone.
Where's our luggage? Fletch asked.
Barbara said, It's gone.
I checked it in this morning, Alston said, so you wouldn't have to be bothered with it at this point.
It's gone?
It's gone.
We need to get it back.
Oh, no, Alston said, it's gone.
The plane's about to go, Barbara said.
It hasn't gone, Fletch said.
Alston looked at his watch.
We're not going? Barbara asked.
We're going, Fletch said to Alston.
You didn't tell her?
I'm not going to.
We're not going to Colorado.
Our luggage is, Barbara said.
Must get it back, Fletch said.
Alston hit the forehead with the palm of his hand.
Skis.
Come on, Fletch said, let's go.
They were rushing up the corridor.
We're not going, Barbara asked.
I've got the tickets, Alston said. Turn them in, I've got the baggage tickets. Get the luggage.
Barbara said, We're not going.
We are going, said Fletch.
Alston, we need to get the luggage to British Air at the international terminal.
The plane's changed? Barbara asked.
We're changing planes.
For Colorado?
London.
London, Colorado?
Kenya.
London, Kenya?
Nairobi, Kenya.
Nairobi, Kenya?
Africa.
Africa?
East Africa.
Barbara mouthed the words.
East Africa?
Didn't you say you'd follow me to the ends of the earth?
Never, you can't even find a pizza parlor in Malibu.
In the terminal's main concourse, Barbara jumped ahead of Fletch, turned around, and stopped. Facing Fletch, she put her fists on her hips.
Fletch, what's going on?
London, Fletch said. Then we're going on to Kenya.
Alston had kept walking.
Tell me what's happening.
We've got a wedding present, Fletch said. A trip to Nairobi, Kenya.
Who from? Tell me another.
Barbara's face flushed.
Fletch, you accepted an assignment from the newspaper on our honeymoon.
No, no, nothing like that.
Flapping boarding passes, airline tickets, baggage stubs, Alston was at the airline's courtesy information booth, clearly straining the attendant's courtesy.
You did too.
Would I do that to you?
I'll be damned if I'm going to sit in some hotel room or some grass shack while you run miles in circles trying to fill up one damned inch of that damned newspaper. Not on my honeymoon.
I told you, the trip is a present. A wedding present. It'll be fun.
I'll bet. A present from the newspaper?
No, not from the newspaper.
Who else would give you a trip to Africa?
The courteous man at the information counter now had a phone to each ear while also apparently listening to Alston.
My father.
Barbara's eyes popped.
Your father?
I guess.
You didn't say I do at the wedding. You said I guess I do. Now you're saying you guess you got a wedding present of a trip to Africa from father?
It's turned into a highly conjectural day. At the counter, Alston's lips were moving rapidly.
You've never had a father, or you've had four of them or something.
What's the difference?
What father?
The one who died.
You've inherited something?
No, we really don't have time to discuss this now, Barbara.
You didn't have time to discuss the wedding either.
And it happened, see? It came off with a hitch. All right, things worked out.
Barbara wagged her head. This can't work out.
Sure it can.
I can't go to Kenya.
We haven't had any shots, have we?
I don't have a passport.
Oh, that.
Fletch reached into the muddy envelope.
You have a passport.
He handed it to her.
Alston was striding toward them, smiling.
Alston, Fletch said, we haven't had any shots.
You only need them for medical reasons, Alston said, not legal reasons.
I'm glad you became a lawyer.
Yeah, Alston glanced at Barbara.
Don't forget, I do divorces.
Where did this picture of me come from? Barbara said into her passport.
Fletch glanced at it over her shoulder.
That's a nice one. Okay. Alston was sorting various tickets and stubs in his hands. Your tickets to Colorado are canceled. Not sure I'll be able to get your money back. Can we get the luggage back?
That's my green sweater, Barbara said at her passport picture.
What they're going to try to do is get your luggage off that plane, then they'll send it over to the international terminal, British Air, and get it aboard your flight to London, check straight through to Nairobi. Fletch put Barbara's passport back in the muddy envelope. We don't know if our luggage is with us until we get to Nairobi.
The skis, Barbara said.
Can't separate the luggage now, Alston shook his head. No way, things are too confusing as it is.
Are you confused? Barbara asked. I'm not confused.
Alston glanced at his watch. We've got to get over to the international terminal, quick. Got to tell them what your connecting flight to Nairobi is. Quick, Fletch grabbed Barbara's elbow.
We're not going skiing, Barbara said. We pack ski clothes, nothing but ski clothes.
Barbara, we have to hurry.
Where?
International terminal, Fletch said. British Air, Alston said. They were dashing across the concourse.
London, England, Fletch said.
Passport control, Alston said.
Nairobi, Kenya, Fletch said.
Fletch, I told my mother I'd call her from Colorado.
Can't stop, Fletch said.
Tonight.
Fletch steered her into the revolving door. Ain't married life fun? After he went through the revolving door himself, he said, so far? Chapter 6.
All my mother wanted to do was meet you.
Barbara fastened her seatbelt.
I met her at the wedding. Would you believe she really wanted to meet you before the wedding?
I met her before the wedding. She was wearing jodhpurs, right? She seemed real surprised to see me.
Dismayed, more likely. She arranged dinner for us every night last week. You never made it, not once.
I was working. Did I tell you I have a job?
And you're dragging me halfway around the world to meet your father?
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
He's known to evade important occasions. Buckled up, Fletch put the side of his face against the back of his seat.
You're going to sleep, aren't you?
Barbara, I have to. I haven't slept in days and nights and days and... Barbara sighed.
How long before we get to Nairobi, Kenya?
2 days.
2 days?
2 nights, maybe 3 days.
Fletch, wake up. Get your head off my shoulder. Listen to what the steward's saying about what to do when the airplane crashes.
That's okay, Fletch mumbled. You're coming with me.
Oh, my God. 7:20 on our wedding night, and he's asleep.
The thing is, Fletch said, I never knew there was a possibility my father is alive. Many, many hours later on the flight from London to Nairobi, they were terribly scrunched up. The airplane was full. The seats were narrow and close to each other. There was hand luggage spilling out from under every seat.
Did your mother know? Did she know there was a possibility he was alive?
I think she convinced herself he was dead. To keep her pride, to keep her sanity. In order to marry again, she had to legally assume him dead after 7 years.
I guess in order to go to court to declare your husband dead, you have to believe he's dead.
But she never really knew. When I'd ask questions about him, you know, growing up, her answers would always be so glib, so casual, you know? I'd get the idea the topic wasn't worth discussing.
Maybe it wasn't.
She says she loved him, though.
What sort of things would she tell you?
She'd say, hey, I was only married to your father 10 months and I never understood him.
Then what would she say?
How do you spell license?
Why would she say that?
Well, you know, she writes these detective novels, and she never could spell. She'd ask me to look words up in the dictionary for her. It was her way of getting rid of me.
What did you know about your father?
I knew he was a pilot. I knew, or thought I knew, he died about when I was born. Therefore, I always assumed he died in a plane crash shortly after I was born, or before. I knew my mother was alone when she gave birth to me. I didn't realize she was awaiting a husband who never showed up. A child accepts what he's told.
Did you ever see a picture of your father?
Fletch scanned his memory.
Never. That's odd, isn't it?
Naturally, there would be pictures of your father around if he were dead.
But not if there was a possibility he was alive and had abandoned you both.
So, that possibility must have been very much in my mother's mind.
Very much, I'd say.
The areas under the seats in front of them were filled, too. Instead of waiting at Heathrow 8 hours for their connecting flight to Nairobi or finding a place to sleep, Barbara and Fletch had bussed into London. Fletch had no clothes but the jeans and shirt he was wearing. Barbara insisted upon buying sweaters. They had lunch in a not very good place. They bought books. They got lost. They had to taxi back to the airport. This little guy just came up to me after the wedding while everyone but the groom was kissing the bride and just handed me this envelope.
I didn't see him.
He was there, I swear it. He didn't say a word. Just handed me the envelope and left.
Barbara asked, "Are you sure he wasn't your father?"
I would think if he were, my mother would have recognized him.
It's been a long time.
Still, they knew each other all through school.
Maybe your mother didn't even see him. We were outdoors, somewhat of a crowd, bad weather.
And you never know whether my mother is seeing real people or socializing with figments of her imagination.
Right, Barbara said. She must have been deeply hurt by all this.
And deeply puzzled.
Barbara smiled.
The mystery Josie Fletcher couldn't solve. Better not let her fans in the libraries know. Her only fans are in the libraries and are silent.
What else was in the envelope?
The tickets, the passports, 10 $100 bills and the letter.
You haven't shown me the letter.
There's nothing to see.
Fletch reached under the seat in front of him and picked up the envelope. It all washed away in the rain.
He handed her the wrinkled piece of paper.
That's sad.
She stared at it in her hand.
Maybe your mother could have recognized the handwriting. How do you know it was from your father?
It was signed Fletch.
What's his real name?
Walter.
Walter? I wonder how I would have thought of you as Walter Jr.
A Fletcher by any other name is still an arrow maker.
So what did the letter say?
She handed it back to him.
In fact, it said something about my name.
He leaned forward as much as he could to put the envelope back.
Something about not liking my names, Irwin Morris. Something about my mother's giving me these names, not him, or not with his agreement, as if he'd had nothing to do with it.
What are you talking about?
He sat back again.
The letter read almost as if my mother gave the baby, me, these names which he didn't like, didn't relate to, on her own, and this made the baby, me, more her baby than his, that he couldn't relate to anyone named Irwin Morris.
Neither can you.
But I've stuck around. I haven't disappeared.
You disappear all the time.
He said he was mildly curious in meeting me, and asked if I was mildly curious in meeting him.
That's the word he used, mildly?
Yes, mildly. But the airline tickets to Nairobi and back are expensive.
Maybe he's rich.
Maybe he was giving us each an out. He wrote I certainly didn't have to come if I didn't want. He said I could cash the tickets in and buy you a set of china or something.
A set of china, Barbara said. I might have liked that.
You'll never see your china, but you will see Kenya.
Maybe this isn't from your father at all.
Barbara wriggled uncomfortably in her seat.
Maybe somebody was trying to get you out of the country for a while. One of these stories you've been investigating.
Well, I suppose that's possible.
Keep you out of court, keep you from raising more trouble or something?
Maybe everyone on the newspaper took up a collection to get rid of me. Maybe the return tickets are no good.
Fletch smiled. Maybe a wild goose chase.
Fletch asked, "Aren't you mildly curious?"
Only mildly.
Fletch continued looking at Barbara.
I'm trying to say something here, she said.
I know. What?
I don't think it's good for you to be more than mildly curious. You know what I mean?
So I won't be more than mildly disappointed?
Yeah, Barbara said. Something like that.
Chapter 7. Jumbo, the customs official in Nairobi Airport said. He eyed the two pairs of covered skis Fletch held upright. Very carefully, Fletch said, Jumbo.
Habari?
He was a short, pudgy, balding man in well-pressed shirt and trousers. Fletch said, Habari. So, you have been to Kenya before?
Never, Fletch said. Never been in Africa before.
That's the way it is, the man chuckled softly. Everyone in the world speaks Swahili.
Barbara said, I've got to take off this sweater.
The two pairs of skis in their soft plastic covers had drawn the particular attention of the customs official to Barbara and Fletch. In fact, the two pairs of wrapped skis were drawing the attention of many people in Nairobi Airport. These people stood in a loose circle around Fletch, Barbara, and the skis. Two of these people were in uniforms. Nightsticks and handguns dangled from their belts. One carried a machine gun. The customs official took his eyes off the wrapped skis long enough to look at the passports Fletch handed him.
Are you visiting Kenya for business or pleasure?
Pleasure, Barbara answered. We were just married, days ago, a million years ago.
Fletch then heard, for the first time, the song he was to hear many times in Kenya. The little song exhaled on three notes.
Oh, I see.
The customs official made a note on his clipboard.
And what sort of shooting equipment is that in the rifle covers you are bringing into Kenya? Very long rifles, I think.
He pointed the back of his pen at them as if they really needed pointing out.
Oh, these.
Fletch looked up and down the skis he held beside him. These are for shooting down mountains. The official looked alarmed.
Shooting down mountains? Is that possible?
Skis.
Skis. Mombasa?
Very carefully, Fletch said, Mombasa.
I have skied off Mombasa, behind a speedboat.
The official took the position of one skiing behind a speedboat, knees bent, arms forward to hold a tow line.
The skis I used were short, perhaps in proportion to the feet.
He looked down at Barbara's and Fletch's feet.
I don't think so.
Snow skis.
Oh, I see. I have seen those in films. This large, are they? You are in Kenya en route to someplace else.
Fletch was hoping that soon he could get to a men's room.
Not really.
Where do you go after Kenya?
Home, back to the States.
You return to the United States, with the skis.
Fletch craned his neck to look through the door of the controlled area to see if possibly anyone was waiting, looking for them.
Yes.
The official thought a long moment.
You always travel with snow skis, even to the equator?
No.
There was some confusion, Barbara said.
Oh, I see.
At the airport, we ended up bringing the skis with us.
At the airport, did you not know you were coming to Africa? Did you get on the wrong plane?
We knew, Fletch said. We got on the right plane.
So you knew what you were doing when you brought your snow skis to Kenya, just to bring them home again?
Well, that's the fact.
Barbara looked at Fletch.
We did bring our skis to Africa.
There is snow on Mount Kenya, the official conceded. But it's at the top, you see. There are no skiing safaris. Perhaps you brought these snow skis to Africa to sell them. They are a curiosity.
We can't sell them, Barbara said. They're borrowed.
Oh, I see. You borrowed skis to bring to Africa and home again.
Fletch, Barbara said, quite reasonably this gentleman wants to know why we brought snow skis to equatorial Africa.
Wait till I take off my sweater.
Fletch leaned the skis against Barbara and wriggled out of his London-bought sweater.
Hot.
Perhaps someone here could use snow skis for a wall decoration, mused the official.
Someone who has a very large wall.
Originally, we were going to Colorado, Fletch said, skiing.
And you failed to get off the plane when it stopped in Colorado?
It didn't stop in Colorado, Barbara said. If it had, I would have called my mother.
The official smiled at her.
Fletch said, It's a little difficult explaining just why we've landed in Kenya carrying snow skis. I admit that.
The official wagged his head.
I love my job.
We'll definitely take the skis with us when we leave, Fletch said.
We have to return them, Barbara said. They're borrowed. I would love to see them, the official said, while they're here.
Of course.
Fletch opened the zipper on one of the ski covers. The man carrying the machine gun stepped back a pace.
Here, Fletch said, skis.
The official seemed surprised.
And those?
He bent his knees again and now used his hands as paddles.
Those are ski walking sticks?
Ski poles.
The official concerned himself with his clipboard. Snow skis are very large items to carry with you when you can't use them.
Cumbersome too, Barbara said.
Fletch said, I'm very fond of them.
He zippered the cover closed again.
May I see what is in your luggage, please? The official asked.
Of course. Fletch handed the skis to Barbara and unzipped his large knapsack. As he folded back the cover, he saw on top of the clothes a book entitled, How to Screw Around.
Oh, my, he said.
He remembered Alston had packed for him. Quickly, he picked up the book and held it by his side. The official stroked the palm of his hand over the nylon surface of Fletch's ski pants.
That feels beautiful, he said, like the skin of a woman. Do you wear these?
Fletch swallowed.
When I go skiing. Oh, I see. These are skiing trousers.
Yes. The official's hand went layer through layer down the bag.
They're like moon clothes.
We're not from the moon, Barbara said.
They're ski clothes, Fletch said.
The official said,
This bag is full of ski clothes.
Fletch said, I suppose it is.
Usually when people come to Kenya for pleasure, the official said, they bring shorts, safari jackets, sun hats, swimsuits, hiking boots.
Fletch said, Oh, I see. The official waved his hand at the bag, indicating it could now be closed.
I'm afraid you won't have a very good time in Kenya if you insist on going snow skiing.
Fletch dropped How to Screw Around back into the knapsack.
We'll try our best.
Chapter 8. Fletch handed Barbara a $100 bill. Would you please go to the exchange booth and get some local currency? Immediately, when they came out of the controlled area, five small boys had grabbed the skis and carried them on their shoulders out to the sidewalk. A man had grabbed the rest of the luggage. Others had just shouted, Taxi, at them.
Where are you going?
Men's room. We need taxi fare.
What's the exchange rate?
Tit for tat, roughly.
Thanks.
There was only one other man in the men's room. Slim, he wore a full-length safari suit. Thinning hair was stretched across his pate. He had a pencil-thin mustache. He was washing at a basin. Sitting in the cabinet, Fletch watched the man's brown boots make the little movements on the floor a person makes while thinking he is standing still. The water was splashing into the basin. The main door to the men's room opened. Heavy black shoes beneath dark trousers came into view beneath the cabinet door. The brown boots turned. The two men spoke a language Fletch didn't understand. He could barely hear it over the sound of the running water. Then one man shouted. The other man shouted. They were both shouting. The feet began moving, agitated. Forward, back, sideways, some sort of crazy dance. The brown boots came nearer the men's room door. One of the black shoes landed on the floor on its side, on the man's ankle. The black shoes pulled backward to the right. The brown boots turned and sprinted for the door. The water was still running. Fletch came out of the cabinet, pulling up his jeans. He pressed the flat of his hand against his stomach. His other hand covered his mouth.